Now look, I'm in Lucky, Steve. I don't get up in the middle of the night like a lot of people do. A lot of men my age, they get up maybe more than once. Gotta take a whiz. That's not the case.
Buccaneers fans, here we go. Training camp 6 weeks away, and you are with the sage of Tampa Bay sports. He's the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the King of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast. We appreciate all the listeners, the thousands, the feedback. The Ira Kaufman Podcast is here. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper is here. Ira, how are you, man? We are just letting everybody know right out of the gate that we're just going all summer long, of course. Plenty to do, plenty to talk about, plenty on our minds, plenty we haven't even touched on. All summer long, two podcasts a week, going up to training camp. We're fired up. We're going to have Sean Sullivan back on the podcast at some point to assess what's been going on. Our good buddy, the GM at Bill Curry Ford, and he is ready to help everyone personally. BillCurryFord.com. 61 years in Tampa. That's a Tampa tradition.
BillCurryFord.com. Get there.
Nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, how are you?
I'm delirious, gentlemen. Delirious. And let me tell you why. Picture this scene, guys. Picture this scene. It's about 10 minutes to 8 this morning. I got my tennis clothes on. I got the sneakers. I got a towel I'm bringing. I had my breakfast. Cosmo went out and back, did his thing. And I'm getting ready to leave. And there's a knock on the door, gentlemen. And no, it's not Amazon. It's not Amazon Prime. It's not a delivery. And I look outside, and it's the sod people. 5 trucks outside with pallets. My sod arrived today, gentlemen, and it was placed down. They came yesterday to level all the dirt, and today they come in, and it looks gorgeous, gentlemen. Gorgeous. Come see me on July 11th. We shall see. I got the sprinklers in. I got the sod in. I'm getting a chemical company. Kemper, I'm giving this a full shot. I've tried and failed about 3 times to maintain this grass, and I'm giving it a full shot. The timer's set, 3 o'clock in the morning. Don't come by at 3 o'clock. Kemper, you're going to get soaked. And I'm ready to go, gentlemen. My wife came out, big smile on her face, took pictures. We will continue this conversation throughout the summer. But Isbitz, I'm sparing no expense. My water bill's going to go up. I don't care. My chemical bill, I don't care. I want this grass to grow, and I want plush. Am I going to get plush, Isbitz? Am I?
You're a strange man, Ira. A very strange man. I think so. I think you'll have some success. You know, hey, it is rainy season, so I don't know. I don't know. Good luck with the grass, Ira. And how about this? When it comes in really well, you invite me and Lee over for the big Joe Bucks fan barbecue.
I love it. And Lee, you know, my goal is to have the kind of grass that the Bucks have at One Buck Place. That's, that's like aspiring to a 20-0, you know, perfect season for the Bucks. That's what I'm looking.
They have a team full-time that manicures that field. I don't think you have that kind of budget either.
I've been known to have a green thumb. You never know.
With a dog doing his business on your lawn, you got to expect some drawbacks.
That's wait a minute. That's good fertilizer. Now, speaking of fertilizer, let's get on with this podcast over
Swaggy
there.
Swaggy Baker.
Well, speaking of the weekend, Ira, and sitting around enjoying the grass in the yard, Big Storm Beer. Big Storm Beer. That is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. And you can buy it in stores. You can get it in quality establishments. And, of course, the Big Storm tap rooms have A-plus food, and they sell all the beers, every possible variety. Because, you know, sometimes you go to Fresh Market, and they've only got 3 or 4 Big Storm beers there. You go to the tap room in Odessa, or in Clearwater, the flagship location, with 3,000 square feet of outdoor covered seating and live music, plus the indoor tap room, or out at the Amway Center in Orlando or in Cape Coral, they've got all, you know, 20-something beers there. on top of fantastic hard seltzers and other things like that. So Big Storm Beer, check it out at bigstormbrewery.com. Get to the tap rooms. We love it all summer long. Fired up to be there soon, Ira, with you guys. That's Big Storm Beer. So, Sage, let me ask you this. We're here, and I know you've been a busy guy. Busy guy, as you always are. People don't realize how busy you are. And I know one thing you've been doing is, you know, working, doing some editing on this book that's coming out. Is by Lars Anderson, famous author. It's on Bruce Arians and the Super Bowl season. Now, you can't read and recite the book to us, but you've been part of the book on other levels, and you're starting to tell us here that this is something that as soon as the pre-order comes out, we better buy it, is what you're saying.
It's a must-read for Buck fans. It's an absolute must-read. I got to tell you, I was shocked because, you know, he's got a big-time publisher, and they really shrunk the amount of time he had to write this book. Normally, he says he's got a year. He's written about 7 or 8 books, including The Quarterback Whisperer with Arians. And here, they wanted the manuscript, Lee, in like, you know, 7 or 8 weeks. I mean, that's rough. And it's probably going to be about 350 pages when it's all said and done. Full cooperation of Arians. He came down to Tampa 2 or 3 times. He talked to every member of the coaching staff. He got his time with Brady. They didn't let him in the facility, Lee. He had to do a lot of interviews at Panera Bread. Lee, I've been reading the manuscript. It's going to be about 12 chapters. I'm through about 7 of them. Incredible detail. And I'll give the readers a taste. And Arians let it all hang out, which I'm very happy he did.
Oh.
So he talks about the first time that Arians met Gronkowski. And, you know, this is the chapter where he talks about Arians going crazy over the COVID. Just absolutely going crazy. Giving speech after speech to the team, one after another. Don't be the guy that screws this up. We got a hell of a team. We got a chance. We got Brady. Don't screw this up. And he didn't use the word screw. And he was like, an absolute cop on the beat. He's all over everybody about wearing masks. Don't catch me without your mask. Well, Gronkowski, gets talked to by Brady and convinced to come back after a year sabbatical. And Gronkowski is signed, and Gronkowski comes to One Buck Place, and he presses the button on the elevator, and he goes to the second floor, and the door opens, and who's standing there just by chance? Arians. And the door opens, and Arians looks at Gronkowski. First time he's ever met this guy. Gronk doesn't have a mask on. No mask. And in this book is the dialogue, and it's one-sided, from Arians to Gronkowski. Called him every name in the book. Plenty of 4 letters in there. What the hell are you doing, Gronk? Where's your damn mask? And that's to put it mildly. Gronkowski didn't know what the hell hit him. He thought he just got hit by Von Miller on a blitz. You know, Gronkowski apologized. He's sheepish. He's this. He's that. And that's the moment that he realized how serious Arians was about this COVID. And Lee, I told you this. The guy didn't even fill up his own car at the gas station. He had somebody else do it. He was absolutely paranoid about COVID. And Lee, and you and I are like this because, you know, I'm at that age group and you've got some health issues. From an Arians perspective, Lee, this COVID thing was always on his mind. Always on his mind.
When it comes to gas stations, I still wear a surgical glove. I mean, that's one, those gas pumps are filthy. So, you know, I get it, but it's interesting. That's the first time you met him. You know, Gronk's like, what the hell? I've been better off with Belichick.
He might have been thinking that, Lee, when he stepped out of that elevator.
What are we getting into here?
There's a lot of great detail about Brady. Christensen is quoted extensively. He's got a chapter on Jason Light, even Light gets his. So not too much on the Glazers yet, gentlemen. I'm 7 chapters in, not much on the Glazers. But a lot of great stuff, Steve. Behind-the-scenes stuff, great detail about the Bucs season. Stuff that's never been reported. Steve, it's obvious that You know, Anderson spent 10, 20 hours with Arians. I mean, a long time with Arians. And he's got Arians' full cooperation, which you have to do, Steve, to write a book like this. If you don't have, and once you got Arians, Steve, you got the rest of the coaches, you got Light, and, you know, you got a little bit of a pathway into Brady. So it's going to be a must read, and Lee knows this. I think it's going to be out in the fall in time for the Christmas season. And if the last five or six chapters are anything like the first seven, it's one hell of a read.
Ira, yeah, speaking of behind the scenes, and Lee, let me clue you in on this. So, you know, we're coming up on 5 years of Ira Kaufman at JoeBucksFan.com. And Ira says to me yesterday, he's like, you know, you guys, you're great. And love working with you guys. Can't believe it's been 5 years and no significant raise, but you got me a car and you got me some other work, but you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I was thinking, Lee, you know, maybe we should give Ira a creative raise. Maybe let him pick a wager that we can bet in one of these sports gambling states and let it ride. Let his sageness determine his raise. If he can get the bet right, then he can get the money. And, you know, then he'll get even more of a raise because we'll have some good odds on it. What do you think of that, Ira? What do you think, Lee?
Very creative. You know, I'm going to encourage the Kemper to go to Vegas in the next couple of months so he can go to a...
Don't have to encourage. I've got the tickets already bought, the hotel paid for.
Very nicely. And you're going to go to sports book, and I'm going to tell you what kind of wager to put down. And
Ira, I got a suggested wager for you here, but I'm going to come up with 10 wagers. and they're going to be, I was thinking maybe we could do 10 that are kind of long shots. So hopefully you can pick 10 and then you can hit one of them. And at least one of them, right? So I'll give you one as an example. Jameis Winston, there's a bet on the board right now where if you bet $100 as Jameis Winston as comeback player of the year in the NFL, that'll win you $2,100. What do you like those odds, Ira, on Jameis?
I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, coming back from what, you could say, coming back from what? But in the words of the Kemper, a man threw for 5,000 yards. In 2019, let's not forget that. Losing record, 30 picks, but he did throw for 5,000 yards, so that would qualify him as comeback. I love that bet, Steve. Excellent example.
Here, Ira, you'll freak out when I tell you this. I read this morning. Well, Pro Football Reference does a thing like Baseball Reference does, where statistically, they're just looking at stats, nothing else. Statistically, they find the closest comparison to a previous player. There was like five or six players they compared to players in the past. Jameis's stats, I just got the feeling you're going to hit the ceiling when you hear this. Jameis's stats are most comparable to Fran Tarkenton.
Interesting. Fran the man, known for his scrambling, Lee, but yes. You know, he was pretty darn successful with the Vikings. I believe he started off with the inaugural Viking team, maybe. 1960, it might be. Lee, he also played for the Giants. The Giants had a really bad team.
Was that Ollie Sherman days?
Yeah, I mean, it was, they weren't any good. You know, he had a lot of success with the Vikings. His misfortune was going up, against the, 1974 or 75 Steelers. I mean,
and the Raiders.
Raiders beat the hell out of him. But he must have thrown a lot of picks early in his career. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah, and late in his career. Didn't he have like 30 picks his last year or 29 picks?
Yeah,
then he was bellyaching about Jameis's picks. Like, whoa, hot calling the kettle black here. And by the way, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Now, Jameis is 6'3", 6'4", and I think Tarkenton might have been 6 foot. Lee. He was short. Yeah, a little guy, but a tremendous scrambler. And
excellent
Lee, back
scrambler.
Then. You know, early 60s, there weren't a lot of quarterbacks that played that style. Not many.
Maybe none.
All right, Ira, let me fast forward 48 years. two other quick bets for you before we get to some current stuff, Sage. This is something that I have some cash on now, Ira. One of the more interesting wagers out there, and I can't figure it out. Maybe you have the mind of the odds makers, but right now... If you put $100 down on Bruce Arians to win Coach of the Year next year, that's going to bring you back $2,200.
and Lee, you know I'm right about this. That is a direct reflection of the expectations of the Buccaneers. And by that, I mean, if he goes, forget this is a regular season award. It is decided and the votes are cast before the postseason. You got to remember that. So, Lee, if he goes 15-2, you know, which would be by far the best record in franchise history, he's still probably not going to get the award, Lee, because of the expectations, and the award will probably go to a guy that goes 10-7 or 11-6 off a previously bad team that sneaks into a wild card. That's the way it goes, Lee. That's the way it goes. So that's what it's about, Steve. I mean, if he goes 17-0, he's going to win Coach of the Year. And I got to vote. I'll vote for him. I think it's a 50-person panel, and I'm one of the voters for Associated Press. But, you know, Belichick hasn't won a lot of Coach of the Year awards, Lee. He hasn't. He's got one, maybe two, after all these years and all these great seasons. So it's about expectations, and Belichick was expected to win 12 or 13 games, Lee. So when he went 14-2, he didn't get it. Same thing with Arians. It does seem a little bit high, Steve. It does. That's the reason.
Well, just for the record, Ira, when I saw this, I did look it up. Belichick has three Coach of the Year awards. You know, I don't know. I think 15 wins and the NFC title is going to be enough for Arians to get it. So I don't know. I kind of like that bet in a few different ways. So you don't like it for your Rays, though, right? You don't like that.
I love that. You got me going on that Winston thing. I might put a few shekels down on that.
All right.
I like that.
One more to think about. Shaq Barrett, $100 is going to get you $3,300 on him being Defensive Player of the Year. You want to gamble your Rays on that, Ira?
No, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
All right. Ira, Lee, I want you guys' perspective on this, because we often on the podcast, we talk about things getting overblown, whether it's leadership, whether it's the play of a certain guy, or value of coaching, or, you know, all kinds of things. We like to look at all sides. And of course, the hot topic, and we talked about it last podcast, Sage, you wrote a brilliant column that published Friday early. Anybody should go back and take a look at that. A lot of good insight and perspective and on repeating and complacency and the success disease, as you called it. But don't you think there's a chance that all of that is just completely overblown, and, you know, maybe a team doesn't win the next year because, hell, they're just not that good, or they're not good enough. And, you know, they had some missing pieces, and a couple of guys got too old, and, you know, things just didn't go right. You didn't get the bounce of the ball. You think maybe this is all overblown?
Maybe, but my gut tells me it's not. Lee, and it's not just football. It's not just football. Lee, no matter what profession you're in, let's say you win the Pulitzer Prize, which I heard you were up for last year, DeKemper, and you came close. But, Lee, you know my point. You strive for the top, and you've heard it a million times, Lee. It's harder to stay there than to get there. And it's a cliche for a reason, because there's a lot of truth to it. The saving grace, Lee, the saving grace, and, you know, 16 teams in a row, I mean, that's not a coincidence. 16 teams in a row have come up short in the NFL. It's very difficult. The odds are stacked against you. Every team's trying to kick your ass. But, Lee, the biggest thing is you lose a little hunger. It's natural. It's human. Arian says he's going to be all over it. Lee, the saving grace, and you know what I'm about to say, the saving grace is number 12. I mean, let's be honest. If Brady wasn't on this team, we'd have very little confidence that the Bucs would be hoisting the Lombardi Trophy again next February in Los Angeles. But they got Brady. And if they can keep him healthy and effective, and if he's healthy, he's going to be effective. I don't have any reason to doubt that. They got a real chance. Again, not a coincidence, Lee. Who's the last quarterback to pull it off? Brady. Now, Seattle came damn close, Lee. Damn close as you can get. And it came down to that Malcolm Butler pick, which was incredible. Otherwise, they go back-to-back, possibly. If he gives the ball to Lynch and he runs 1 yard for a touchdown, people are screaming at Belichick why he didn't call timeout, and Seattle's a back-to-back champion. It can happen. It can, but it's very difficult for a reason. I understand Steve's point. Maybe these teams just weren't good enough. Believe, if it happened 16 times in a row, I think there's something to it.
Yeah, and like you said, Ira, it's all sports. It's not just football. And as you also pointed out, it's only natural when you climb to the mountaintop, you take a breath of fresh air. You relax, you sigh, you soak it in. It's only natural. It's only natural. And I don't know how many times people can harp on it. It's still going to happen a little bit. I will tell you this. Cam Brate was talking about, you were mentioning Brady. You know, Cam Brate said Brady is in minicamp was just as fiery, just as intense, standards just as high as it's always been. He says cussing guys out for screwing up, making mistakes. It's still the same old Tom Brady. So you're right, the Brady element helps. I think, though, as equal, if not more so, than complacency is that bye week. I really believe the late bye week is the reason why the Bucs won the Super Bowl. I really believe the early bye week is no help to the Bucs whatsoever this fall. And even Cam Brate, when he was on NFL radio yesterday, he wasn't asked this. He offered this information. The late bye week helped. And I that's why when I saw the schedule come out, I saw the early bye. I didn't like it. I did not like it. And one reason why teams don't repeat is because they played more games the previous season, and their window for their bodies to recuperate in the offseason is shrunk by 5 weeks. That's significant, I think.
It is.
So I really believe as much, if not more so, than, you know, just a tad of complacency is that bye week, that late bye week, and, you know, playing more games the previous season. I think that's going to be a factor. I hope I'm wrong, but I think it's going to be a factor, not necessarily a good factor.
Steve, to be fair and accurate, I wouldn't call it an early bye week. It's a mid-year bye week. But, you know, in a perfect world, Steve, I agree with Lee. I would have liked to seen it push back a couple of weeks. But you can't always get a week 13 bye week. That's not going to happen every year.
Yeah, just to clarify for the listeners, after the Bucks go to New Orleans on Halloween, then they've got their bye week. And that is week 9. So they're off week 9. My big focus, Ira, is the bye week in week 18. That's the one I want because I think if they get that one, then the other bye weeks and when it was just doesn't matter. That's the one they really need for a team like this to be able to prepare and have that extra time and time off. And also, of course, if you can clinch early, you can make week 17 a bye week for a lot of guys. So that's where my focus is. But I hear you. You never know. These bye weeks are wacky. You know, you might have three guys get hurt at the Saints and be like, oh, man, the bye week came at the best time. Or it can go in reverse, and you just don't know, especially with the Bucs. As we talked about last podcast, Ari, you can get burned out real early if you're trying to just go psycho to repeat and be all dialed in and fired up. At some point, you know, you need a break. So it'll be interesting to watch that. I wanted to just specify, Ira, Lee, you talked about climbing the mountain. Here at JoeBucksFan.com, Ira, it's been years already since we verifiably put everybody else in the dirt, and we don't let up. No smugness of success here. We don't need a psychologist, like you said on your in your last column, Ira. We don't need a shrink, so we keep the pedal to the metal. So maybe Bruce Arians wants to check in with us.
You know, along those lines, and Lee, you could add a name or two. Lee, there's certain guys in sports. There's certain guys, and they talk about competitive drive, hunger. Michael Jordan comes to mind. Tiger Woods comes to mind. Tom Brady comes to mind. You might throw in a Larry Bird comes to mind. A Gretzky.
Roy Cummings.
Magic. Yeah.
Outstanding. Lee, guys that have climbed that mountain and never lose one drop of their hunger. I mean, it's very rare, Lee. There's not a lot of guys like that, but they're out there. They're out there. And the Bucks have one of them. They got one of them.
Yeah, the two names that would immediately come to mind about that would be Magic Johnson and Bob Gibson.
Yeah, Gibson's a good one, Lee. Gibson's a good one.
I got one more name for you, Ira, as far as top of the mountain, and that is Florida's Elite Restoration. That is exactly who you call because they are the best in the Bay Area and beyond for when you have a disaster in your home. Maybe it's mold. Maybe it's wind damage from a storm or a fire or a flood, of course. Pipe breaks, and what do? You call Florida's Elite Restoration immediately, 24/7. They will give you a free assessment of what's happening at your house. They're licensed mold remediation specialists. They know what they're doing big time. They work for apartment communities. They work with a lot of great contractors, plumbers, and they can work for you. And they'll come out free, and they'll help you navigate the insurance process, which can be complicated. You can get ripped off. When you have a disaster, you need someone who you can trust. And who is that, Ira?
Florida's Elite Restoration.
That's right, Ira. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Put it in your favorites. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Put it on the fridge. When the time comes, you know what to do.
Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida'sElitereStoration.com.
And Sage, I have to say, as long as we're putting Top of the Mountain out there, Bill Curry Ford, 61 years in Tampa, family owned. GM Sean Sullivan is ready to help Bucks fans personally right now. BillCurryFord.com.
You know, Brady, you know, getting back to this Lars Anderson book for a second, there's a lot of detail about Brady. I mean, a lot. And his interaction with the players and his attention to detail, which is like beyond the pale. Like after losses, the guy doesn't sleep at night. He doesn't sleep. And, you know, and then he's at the facility at 4:30 on Monday morning. You know,
well, you know what? You bring this up, and it's a very interesting point. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Ira. This is what I'm saying. It's not about Brady, but it's about Monday morning me. You know, I already referenced Cam Brink was on NFL radio Thursday. He said that the Bucks actually had a team meeting like you normally have the morning after a game, the Monday morning after the Super Bowl. They were out partying all night till, you know, probably till dawn. They had a team meeting that morning. They had a team meeting at $1.
That's unbelievable, Lee. That's unbelievable. And Steve, Brady was on a Zoom call this week, Steve, and I believe he said that he started a discussion with Arians about the 2021 season the day after the Super Bowl. Am I wrong about that, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of stories about that, how he called Clyde Christensen. Every time Christensen tells the story, he gives a different time of day. He's like, he called me at 7 a.m. He called me at 8:30. It's always a different time of day. Man, that seems a wildly. I have to go back and listen to that, that they had a team meeting the day after the Super Bowl. That almost seems like, I mean, everybody's alcohol content was probably still over the limit by 10 a.m. Something's weird about that.
Yeah, well, Brady said that Arians told them at that meeting, he goes, okay, on Wednesday we're having the boat parade, and after that we're done with the Super Bowl.
You think maybe the meeting was online?
I don't know.
Could have been, because I'm like, Steve, like, you know, these guys were probably at least half drunk the next morning.
Lee, who am I to question Brady? But, Lee, if they did have an in-person team meeting on Monday, that's over the top, the Kemper. That's over the top.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked that he said that. Yeah, he said that. He goes, hey, it was the morning after the game at our team meeting. You know, Arian said, okay, we want it. Celebrate it today. That's it. We'll have a boat parade Wednesday. I don't want to hear anything more about it after that.
If they had an in-person team meeting on Monday morning, they came straight from the party. They didn't go home. They came straight.
Hey, Sage, this is our cue now to get to our interview with assistant D-line coach Lori Locust. And I say it's our cue because Lee asked her about that team meeting following the Super Bowl, and that's in the interview. So this was a bit of a surprise to us in the timing. We found out that Coach Locust could talk to us late Sunday night. So Lee and I talked to her, and that's why we delayed the podcast, which was going to come on Saturday. So anyway, it's here. We still got two more podcasts this week, and enjoy. And we'll get back to you, Ira, when it's done. All right, as promised, here's Coach Lori Locust, assistant D-line coach of the Bucks. Very excited, always excited to have coaches here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Coach Locust, thanks. We got a lot of football to talk with you.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect. Happy to be here. Thank you guys for making the time.
Oh, absolutely. One thing I've always been dying to ask, and I know it's maybe just a nerdy kind of football thing, but the process is different. And, you know, gosh, in June, this is when we talk about this stuff. On a lot of teams, there's just one defensive line coach, and their duties, right. You know, their duties include the outside edge rushers and a 4-3 mm-hmm. defense kind of thing. But with the Bucs, you know, the outside linebackers are coached separately. And I was just wondering, what's the process to keep the messaging consistent and everybody on the same page? And obviously, you know, you and Coach Rogers aren't around, JPP and Shaq all the time. Sort of how did you be able to just keep everything so consistent and the unit working so well together?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because this is kind of the system that I've been, I guess, within, if you want to think about where I've been prior to Tampa. When I did my internship with the Ravens, there was an assistant D-line coach, and he actually sort of did the edge rushers when we would split up. So it had a little bit more of like a direct tie back to the D-line. We had meetings together, things like that. I think it's really just a commitment to the overall scheme. Larry Foote is an amazing coach. He's going to do big things in the league. Going, you know, in his career, but the way he coaches his guys, the way that Casey coaches our room, you know, the way I help support Casey in that room, and then the way that Todd puts together our defensive schemes, it's all collaborative. So there are a lot of times where we'll do joint drills or we'll go over games or stunts or things that we want to accomplish per game plan with the outside linebackers with us, because communication obviously is huge. They've been great with us. We've been good with them. There's been a lot of good discussion during the game in regards to the players letting each other know what's about to happen, reminding them of the call. And it's just, if we didn't have the players that we had right now that were just so tuned in to winning, and now, to be honest with you, trying to repeat, we probably wouldn't have the success that we do. But it's very organic. It's nothing forced. Like, there's no period every week where we're putting all of the guys together. It's just, hey, we need to go over this. Let's do the calls together. Let's run these stunts together. And it's a formula that's worked, and I don't see that changing.
It's great that you've been able to pull that off so seamlessly. It just seems like an extra layer of communications as needed, but you pull it off. With Vita Vea, I was going to ask, you know, he's such a unique talent. And are there mm-hmm. are there players in the league or retired players that you steer him to watch film of? You know, because again, there's just not a lot of guys like him.
That's true. I mean, he's sort of he could do it all. We saw that, you know, with his offensive skills that we give him a lot of crap for, you know, going to the other side of the ball. But he's such an athlete. There's really not, you know, unless Casey's had some direct discussions with him, you know, that I'm not privy to, but we don't really do that a lot. We haven't done that a lot since we've gotten here. I know what you're talking about, you know, because you have a younger player and you want them to be able to see, you know, some techniques, or you want them to be able to see a style of play that's close to theirs, but at a higher level, so that they can, you know, maybe gain some insight or see a move or kind of fine tune what they do. But I'll be really honest with you, we've been coaching the players and really as they are, really trying to pull out what they're good at, really trying to circle back and fill in where they need a little bit more work, or we need the fundamentals to be a little bit stronger. But we don't really do that kind of like shadowing of, you know, this is sure. such and such's technique from, you know, 5 years ago, you know, you're kind of like him. You remind us of him. We don't really do that. And I think that allows the guys to really be unencumbered, because to me, if you're, this is my opinion, but if you're constantly putting somebody else in front of them and saying, you know, look at what you could do, look at what you could do, I feel like you limit them. Because now you're saying, this is the guy that we see you as 5 years from now. And what if they're going to be better? You know what I mean? And as long as you're helping them and you're not overcoaching them and you're making sure that they're fundamentally sound and can play fast because they know the team so well, I don't really think that aspect is used as often as it used to be. because we're trying to look at the individual player and make them better and not make them into somebody else.
And that actually makes sense too. You know, why copy a guy? Be your own self. Be correct. The best you can be. The defensive line, and I only for this question, I'm going to factor these guys in. You know, obviously, you know, because they're pass rushers, but they're not under your umbrella, so to speak. But, you know, everybody knows about JPP. We all know about Shaq Barrett. We all know about Stu. And, obviously, we all know about Vita Vea. But there's a guy that starts that may have had a bigger role than most people recognize. That's Will Golston. Now, in previous regimes, they tried to turn him into a defensive end, mostly. And I think unfairly because of that, because the Bucs were so desperate for a pass rush, that people said, okay, if you're going to be defensive end, you got to get 8 sacks. And he was never going to be an 8 sack plus guy a year. But he always played to run pretty well. And can you maybe talk about Will Golston a little bit? Maybe a game that he had that was overlooked, or a couple of key plays that he had in a key game that also maybe isn't overlooked, but kind of an example of what kind of player he is.
Right. I'm sitting here like shaking my head the whole time you're talking, because yes, all of that. You know, it's interesting. I'm going to go with a bit of a broader start to the answer to this question. When we came in, the culture was entirely different. And not to say that it was bad, and not to say, you know, anything about, you know, previous coaching styles, but there was like a heaviness in that room, actually in the building, really. And it was almost like you said, like it felt uncomfortable. It felt like what they had been asked to do previously was like wearing your left shoe on your right foot. Like, it was just uncomfortable. Like, it just didn't fit. And it took us a while, obviously, with the new system to get the guys to buy into it, because, you know, when you do that, you kind of have to cleanse all of the stuff that you knew from before, and the coaching technique and the responsibilities that you have. And now you have to reinsert a whole new mentality and a whole new way of doing things. And you're right. When you look at Will previously, he was not as effective as he has been for the past 2 years. And it's because now the position that he plays, the four tech for us, and, you know, obviously we want the guys to know all of the positions on the line. We want them to be interchangeable. But Will is such a force at that four technique, and he knows that position really well. He knows every call that we have for everybody on the line. Like, he's just become such a student of the game. And we'll look at his film afterwards, and he's like the quiet assassin. Like, if you want to see somebody who's really out there mauling a lot of the offensive tackles, or just really being like effective or helping the rest of the line or setting the edge, like, he's just been so productive. We talked about it last week, that Sue and Will lead the team with quarterback hits last season. So I don't even know that there's one game that I could like pull out, but I can tell you that Will is there. Like, almost every play, Will is there. And you know, between him and Sue, we always joke around, because it's almost like they're in competition during a game to see who can get to the quarterback first. But, he has just, you know, he's had a few years in the league, you know, and not a bad career overall. But my goodness, like, he just really seems to be hitting his stride with the system that we play, with what we're asking him to do. He's a better fit for a 3-4 front than he is in a 4-down because of his length and because of his – he's so strong. He's just ridiculously strong, and he's tough. You're right. He's the one that kind of doesn't get talked about as often, but he's like the anchor to that line, and there's so much we would not be able to do if Will was not playing at the level that he's playing at. And I think this year is going to be even better for him because he's going to be healthy. And it's just – it's so exciting to know what we're coming back with And with the additions, you know, that we have not only in our room, but in the outside linebacker room, it's just very exciting. We're really happy with what we saw last week with the mini camp, and we're just really ready to continue to see where we can build.
Wow, that's great. Now, Will, and Steve always mentions how Will Golston had, you just mentioned it, how he had the most quarterback hits. And that still, to this day, that surprises me because of all the talent you have on your defense.
Sure.
That wouldn't be the guy you would think. If, you know, we put up a quiz on JoeBucksFan.com and who had the most quarterback hits, he probably had the lowest, votes, you know.
Sure. He's the quiet assassin. You just don't see him coming. He's there.
Obviously, analytics are a much bigger deal these days than they were 5-10 years ago. Fortunately, they haven't ruined football like they've ruined baseball and basketball. I don't think that'll ever happen. But when you're devising a strategy, an attack plan for your next opponent, how much do you use the analytics to help you decide what you're doing for the next game?
That is another good question. They're definitely taken into consideration, and I'll speak directly to what Coach Casey and I will do when we do the breakdown of the opponent. Casey is responsible for the run game, and of course I support him and in short yardage and goal line. And we will definitely look at by personnel group, the run pass percentage, and then the use of the personnel groups in an overall game. They had 40% use of 11 personnel, 70% of that was pass, 30% was run. And then you can get super granular with if it's 2nd and 7, they're more likely to pass than they are to run. But if it's 2nd and 3, then it's more like a run. I mean, we'll look at stuff like that. But honestly, the way that Todd breaks down an opponent, he's looking more directly at the film. He's really getting a feel for the way that they've been playing up and until we see them. He has a tendency, which I think is really interesting, to kind of come at a game through the eyes of the offensive coordinator. Like, how would an OC prepare for us? What would you do to try and beat us? And then works backwards into the game plan to sort of confuse that mentality, as opposed to, like you said, taking all of the granular data and then, you know, with a PFF mentality saying, well, it's, you know, on the negative 40 and it's 2nd and 5 and they're on the left hash, it's 60% run. Like, it gets too much, you know. It doesn't always bear out because there's a human factor to it. You can't always predict the way that it's going to react. It could be absolutely on point and the running back trips on a blade of grass and it just throws the numbers off. But it's just, there are some teams that use that so much and really depend on it. And I know that there's a lot of, I don't want to say all front offices, but there's a lot of push in some teams to have analytics be used really a lot more heavily. And you kind of take then, like I said, the human factor out of it, or the actual coaching or the scheme of a game, because you're just like, it's like a plug and play. You're making it like a video game if you're like heavy into the analytics over top of what your team, your athlete, your player, your front, your back guys, what they can do. So where we're at right now, it's considered, but if it came push to shove, we're going to go with Todd Bowles and his ability to pick apart an opponent.
Which obviously he's pretty good at.
Almost, it's like, very good.
Like self-scouting, Todd Bowles.
Yeah.
Almost like a self-scouting.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I always tell the analytics guys and the stat guys. You know, I consider it information, but it shouldn't dictate. And I'll just give you a perfect example. You talk about the human element. Let's say in the middle of the first quarter, a center slightly sprains his ankle. He can still play, but he's a little gimpy. Well, you got to take advantage of that. You can't just look at the numbers from the last game. You guys are just play by play by play, not drive by drive or possession by possession. It's play by play.
Yep. The closest that I've come to like analytics is when I did the internship with the Ravens. There was a young lady that was interning with me who's an analytics intern. And we used to have a lot of discussions because it's, you know, her perception of the game and mine, obviously it's different. Like, you're coming at it from two different sides, you know, and I have a healthy respect for that side of it. Between the two of us, we actually developed an evaluation tool for training camp, because there you can, in my mind, that was the marriage of the two. We would take the script, and when we're out on the field, I knew what the play was going to be, I knew what the call was going to be, and I knew who was in for that call. And then we gave it like a plus or minus. So if I used players A, B, and C for this call and this split, it was a successful defensive play. If I use D, E, and F, it was a negative play. And you just throw all that data in at the end of the day, and then you can say every time player A was in, 70% of the time it was positive outcome for the defense. If player F was in, it was 99% negative for the defense. And it kind of allowed them, obviously you're watching tape or whatever, but just to show you like numbers to back up a decision, like a personnel decision, I think you could use it heavily for that, because it's more an evaluation tool. But in a preparation stage, I don't see it being as viable, because there's just too many variables that could change your approach.
That's a very clear answer. I mean, I like that, because I've learned something. Well, I'm learning every time you answer something, I'm learning, but that's really interesting. It's more of an evaluation tool than a preparation tool. That's interesting.
My opinion, but yeah, that's my opinion.
Our conversation continues with Coach Lori Locust, assistant D-line coach of the Buccaneers, here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, presented by Tampa's first family of Ford, Bill Curry Ford. Start shopping now at BillCurryFord.com. It's just that simple, BillCurryFord.com. Coach, what do fans need to know about Khalil Davis after seeing him flash a couple of times last year, but not really getting a lot of time? And how hard do you think it was for him and for you evaluating to not have a preseason last year?
I think for all rookies, it was very difficult to not have that time on the field and to get sort of the shakes out with, you know, live game, live speed, bullet flying, things like that. And, but I think, you know, Khalil is learning. We were really happy with his advancement that we saw in the few weeks, you know, that we had him here in the spring. He's very committed, you know, just like any young player. I mean, he's training hard. He's sort of under the tutelage of Sue. So we're happy with that as well. And, you know, he wants to be productive and he wants to be at the next level. So, you know, I think it's done the right way when you're giving him, you know, time. You saw him pretty much, if you look back, anytime he went in on sub, he was with Sue. So, you know, there's a method to that madness too. And we're going to see big things out of Khalil. He's a good kid, and he's definitely found his niche in the room with the guys. And I think, you know, the way Casey has it and the rotation that we have, it's just going to be an added benefit to have somebody kind of on the, you know, on the uptick for us, and he'll fill in nicely. But yeah, he's working hard. We're really happy with him.
Sure. You know, I almost hate asking Tom Brady questions of everybody on the Bucs, but hey, we got 20 minutes in, so I got to ask at least one.
You know, sure.
So much is made of the Tom Brady effect, as they call it, and how he rubs off on everybody around him. How would you say Brady's presence impacted the defensive line, if at all?
I think everything that you've heard about him in regards to the effect is absolutely on point. We had good guys, obviously, throughout the time that we've been here. We had guys that really wanted to get the wins and you know, kind of change the way things had been in the past. And, you know, my goodness, BA is such he's such a culture changer. You know, he can drive a culture and change it, turn it around, which it really did need to happen when we were there after the first year, for sure. But there's something about the change that occurred when Tom came that is just palatable. I mean, guys almost like you could almost feel like a lift in the building, because his mere presence alone was almost like, now we have the potential. Like, we knew what we wanted to do. We knew what we wanted to get done. But having him there, it was almost like the guys were like, you know what? Why not? You know, like, why not us now? And it kind of stepped everybody's, like, game up. It stepped everybody's mood up. I mean, it was incredible. And the best thing about it is that Tom didn't do anything extra except just be himself, you know? Very nice, very approachable. Just he's a very quiet leader in regards to the way he carries himself, the way he preps. Like, he didn't have to say anything at all, and guys were already like, okay, you know, I'm going to put in the extra time. I'm going to work a little bit harder. Nobody had to say anything at all. So I just think that he, you know, with all of the success that he had, you know, obviously, you know, the talent that he has, he's an amazing, gifted athlete, you know, to be able to play this long and be this successful. It just really was the last piece of the puzzle for us to have everybody be in that mindset. Like, we can do this. We have the talent to do it. We have the coaches to do it. We're going to get it done. And we did.
Wow. Well, I've got a couple more and then I'll be finished. I'll save my best one for the last. But obviously you're working with Casey Rogers. Wherever Casey Rogers has been, he's gotten pressure on the quarterback, and he's mm-hmm. coached with good coaches. What is something that you may have learned from Casey that you didn't pick up on before, or anything that you utilize now that you didn't utilize before, that no matter where your career takes you, whether you stay here long-term, whether you go somewhere else, what is something you have taken away from Casey and you will utilize it going forward? How many years, you know, however long that you're coaching football?
Listen, Casey has taught me more about the offense
really
than I've ever probably wanted to know. But I think that that's something that gets so overlooked, because anywhere that I've been before, I've never done this much work. And the guys in the room too, this isn't just me, because it's collective, but, you know, looking at the offensive formations on tape, seeing, you know, really picking apart, you know, how the tendencies are for certain offensive sets against a 3-4 defense, being able to call out where the ball is about to be run, or if they're set up, you know, it's an amazing gift that he has to be able to read the offense, and him and Todd both, but just being in the room, we study more of the offensive set formations, plays, blocking schemes. It's like, it's been a college course. four credit college course since I walked in. But it's amazing, because it's going to help me, right? And like you said, I mean, it just rounds you out as a coach to be able to know the opponent in our room, obviously the O-line and the offense. But my goodness, like, the guys know it. Like, I don't, you know, now that we're going to have crowds, nobody's going to be able to pick them up. I don't know if anybody picked it up last year, you know, when watching like a TV copy of a game, but there's a lot of times that they would call out the exact play that was about to be run.
Wow.
And, you know, I know that, you know, different defenses do that. I know that I've heard other coordinators do it, but not normally the D line. That's normally like the linebackers see it. You know, these guys have their hand in the dirt and they know exactly what block they're about to get, because they know they're on the front side of a call, or they know that they're on the backside and they know what options they have on the backside of the call. And they're able to play just a half a second quicker because they understand, because they watch a lot of film, they become students of the game. They know what the offense runs. They know where the back is set. They know what's about to happen. It's been an amazing transformation in our room. And I would say that that's among the 10,000 things that I've already learned from Casey in these last 2 years that I'll be able to take with me anywhere I go to help, you know, be successful or stay in Tampa. which I would love to do.
It's really rough during the winter, right? You know, November, December game. Really rough down here, yeah.
Yeah, there's these, like, long tubular sticks that appear in my hands, like, three times a week now with a little white ball that I, you know, never would have seen happening before. But, yeah, no, it's a wonderful place, and I'm just very blessed to be here, and I'd love to make a long run of it.
My last question for you, it's football-related, but it's not 100% football. you've got to have some Super Bowl stories. Yeah, something that people didn't know about. Some people, you know, what is one of your favorite stories that maybe happened on the sidelines, maybe leading up to the game, as far as, you know, the week of preparation? That maybe at some point you're like, I think we got these guys, or maybe in a celebration afterwards. But what is one of your favorite, or maybe a couple of favorite memories that you have?
Yeah, I will take you back to the start of those 2 weeks going in. To the Super Bowl. I don't know how to describe it in the building other than to say, like, you're so locked in that you get to be celebratory for maybe about 5 or 10 minutes, but then immediately your brain goes to the next game, right? So we're leaving Green Bay, great feeling, but, you know, we're breaking the game down on the plane. We're we're thinking about the lack of sleep that we're about to get, you know, to go into the building to get started for the next game, which is the Super Bowl. And then you have kind of that 2 week lag. And I don't know if it was because of COVID. I don't know if it was because of it being in our home stadium, but there was such a sense of calm, right? Not like all of the swirl of the stuff that you hear about with the Super Bowl, because, you know, COVID restricted the media, like, probably by 90%, right? So that aspect was out of it, right? Yeah, exactly, right? And then there were no parties. There were no events. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just, it was quiet.
Subdued, yeah.
So, yeah. So we in the building, I've obviously never been, I've never been to a Super Bowl, let alone coached in a Super Bowl. But I can only tell you that there was not one time in that entire lead up period where anyone in the building ever gave off a vibe like we weren't going to win. It was the weirdest calm that I've ever felt going into a big game, let alone the biggest game. But it was like we approached everything in the same cadence. We had the same meetings. We had the same review. We had the same structure. Like, nothing was off kilter. We just were kind of in this, like, holding pattern because we just couldn't wait to get to that game. And even that game, because you're at home, it felt surreal that it was, like, on the biggest stage and there's all this other stuff. But I just remember thinking, like, this is odd. Like, everybody talked about, like, well, you know, so, you know, after we win, this is going to happen. And after we do this, this is going to happen. Not one time. There was not one time that anybody said out loud, you know, what if we don't? There was no doubt. It was crazy. That part to me was crazy because it's a battle. Although this is what I will tell you about Kansas City. They jumped out on us really quick the first time we played them. Mm-hmm. And it caught everybody by surprise. And, you know, obviously they're world champs. We get it. But if you go back to that game and you go to the second half and you see the adjustments that were made, that's what we were going off of, right? Like, the guys were like, you know what? They're beatable and we can beat them. It's not that they're beatable by any team. We had them beat in that second half. And I think that's part of, like, what was adding into this, like, we know exactly what we need to do. We know exactly what we need to accomplish up front. And we knew that it was on our backs and the guys were just rising up to it. It was the coolest thing ever. And then, you know, I'm up in the booth for the game, you know, trying to, like, stay focused, trying to just, you know, get everything, you know, together, you know, during the game, pay attention to what's in front of me. And I think I've said this before, but it wasn't until the start of the fourth quarter that I realized we had not let them score a touchdown yet. And in my head, I'm like, oh, well, listen, you know, it's Mahomes. Like, this is okay. Like, you know, don't get yourself, like, wound up. You still have a quarter. That's a ton of football time. Like, you know, relax. And then it went by so fast, and I'm like looking at the clock and it's 2 minutes left, and I was like, this is gonna happen, like this is bananas, like, oh my god. And then we fly down, the whole staff flies down to the field, and by the time we get down there, you know, the confetti's going and the cannons are going and everybody's like hugging everybody. And I don't know if you guys saw it or not. They caught it on film. I didn't realize JPP was mic'd up. I gave him a hard time for that after the game. But, you know, he's one of my favorite players, one of my favorite people. And I'm just so proud of him for everything that he's been through, everything he went through over the course of last year to get back to the level of play. And, you know, I'm grabbing him and, you know, I'm so proud of you. And of course that got caught on camera, but it's just, I was glad to be able to like find him. You know, I found all the D-line guys, you know, made sure that I touched base with them. And I think what really caught me was when they allowed the families down onto the field and, you know, I'm kind of looking around and I see my youngest son and he's just on a dead sprint towards me. He's crying. I'm crying at this point. We hit each other, like, really literally, collided. But it was just, you know, having him there, being able to share it with him, I mean, that, as a parent, you know, it's just, there's no better feeling. My older son lives in California and was afraid at that point, which is totally understandable, to make the flight.
Yeah.
You know, and just, but to have that ability to share that with my son is something I'll never, ever, ever forget. And that means the most to me. I mean, the after party was insane. I can't remember a time during season when I was up past 9 o'clock at night. And I think I walked in at like 4 that morning. And then the congratulation text started coming through at 5. So needless to say, I didn't have a lot of sleep that day after. But just the full experience of seeing how much work these guys put into the season, the sacrifices that everybody made with COVID, the restrictions that we were all under, it was such a culmination of effort that, you know, I still process it. I still see highlights on TV and it still seems surreal that was us and I was there and I was a part of it. But, you know, it's just, I think none of it, even the, you know, the little details will ever go away. It's just a phenomenal piece of history for us. And I was just so blessed to be a part of it.
You had goosebumps just talking about it, didn't you?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, when I think about my son, that always like kind of gets me. It's the first time I didn't get a little shaky on it, but
you know what? I have one more question, but I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if you heard about this or not. You were talking about how, you know, the second half of the Chiefs in the first game in November. Well, Bill Cowher was on NFL radio a week or two after that game. And one of the guys who was interviewing asked him, how is anybody going to shut down Patrick Mahomes? And he said, go back and watch what Todd Bowles did in the second half of games with Tampa. That's how you shut him down.
Yep.
So here's my follow-up question. Cam Brate said this on SiriusXM NFL Radio this week, and it blows my mind. And I don't know if this is actually true or not, but you sort of brought it up with the after party. Did Bruce Arians actually have a team meeting at One Buck Place on the Monday after the Super Bowl, the Monday morning after the Super Bowl? That's just a plan if that's the case.
You know what, I think we did. It's kind of like a blur right now, but you know what, I think he's right. I think it wasn't like, it may have been in the afternoon.
Okay,
that
makes
day
a little more sense.
yeah. Listen, BA, you know, those guys, now that you've really gotten to know him and really just gotten behind him, they'd go through walls for him. And rightly so. I've known him since the early 80s and he's never, ever been any different. He's so consistent. He's so authentic. He's just an amazing coach. I would have loved to have played for him had I had the opportunity. He's an amazing man. He's an amazing father and husband and just all around great guy. And he's the best.
Well, Coach, gosh, we're so appreciative of you being so generous with your time here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. I hope maybe we can catch up with you again at the bye week or something like that. It would be
sure.
Fun.
We appreciate sure, anytime, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it, and have a great, great summer. But hopefully, you got some vacation before it all gets crazy again.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. Thank you so much.
Ira, great stuff right there from Coach Locust. So appreciative of her time. So much insight and perspective and little nuggets that we can chew on in future podcasts. And I've listened to it twice already. Just a really great interview on a lot of levels. And, good job, Lee. And I hope all the listeners enjoyed that. You can subscribe to Ira's podcast, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Google Podcasts, wherever, on most of the platforms. And of course, we thank the presenter of the Ira Kaufman podcast that makes things like Coach Lori Locust happen on the Ira Kaufman podcast, Bill Curry Ford, GM Sean Sullivan. He's ready for you personally to take care of you like a friend in the business. Email him, call him, go to BillCurryFord.com. Sean will help you personally. Just that simple. Tell him Ira sent you. He'll give you an Ira Kaufman discount. Tampa's first family of Ford, Bill Curry Ford. And Florida's Elite Restoration, remember that name, Florida's Elite Restoration. When you have a disaster in your home, call them immediately. And after you call them, sit back and drink an ice-cold Big Storm beer. Big Storm is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. Find out all about Big Storm at BigStormBrewery.com. Ira, I got a little one-liner from Bruce Arians that something tells me it's not a throwaway line, and it's intriguing a little bit, maybe not, but talking about the running back competition for starters, you know, we've already talked about how, there's the Rojo, the Fournette thing. Lee has said, hey, just tell these guys, you tell me your play, let your play tell me who's number one. And Arian said, he doesn't care. Training camp will determine that. But then he said, Keyshawn Vaughn has made a nice move. That's the quote. Keyshawn has made a nice move. But, you know, he has to be better at special teams because of what's in front of him, blah, blah, blah. But I think him saying has made a nice move, to me, that tells me that he's gained Arian's confidence even more in just a little bit of OTAs and minicamp and made a move on those guys as far as his ability. And we know that Vaughn is probably going to get all of the carries, literally, in preseason. You know, I don't know. He might actually have a legitimate shot to get some real carries this year and compete with those guys. That's in my mind. What do you think?
I don't read it that way, Steve. To me, what it means is Vaughn's going to have a real shot in 2022. He's going to have a real chance. Lee, the odds on Fournette and Jones both being back in 22, I don't think they're very good. Maybe one of them. Possibly neither of them. Lee, the fact that he says Vaughn's got to play better on special teams tells me right then and there. He's not going to compete for carries necessarily. He's a backup. And he will continue to be a backup as long as these two guys are ahead of him. Lee, what I think is interesting is, you know, if you give Fournette, you know, 14 carries and you give Jones 11, are you gonna piss both guys off? Rather than give one guy 18, and the second guy is clearly a number two. I mean, you know, you gotta worry because Fournette was pouting last year. Lee, we all know that. I mean, that's not something that we made up in the media. It's not fake news. He turned it on.
Pouted. What was the end result?
The end result is he played his ass off.
What was the ultimate end result?
Bucks hoist the Lombardi Trophy. That's what happened.
If you're pouting because another guy's doing better than you, suck it up.
I'm with you. But, you know, Steve, Jones has had some issues with confidence. He has. And he had a hell of a year, averaging over 5 yards a carry. And if Fournette steals his lunch over here, he's got to be wondering about his future with the Bucks. But I'm with Lee. That's on you. You got to be able to handle it. You're going to get your chance. It's a long season. You got to suck it up. I'm with the Kemper on that.
I got it, Sage. Another reason people might be pouting is if they don't go to BillCurryFord.com and start shopping there and reach out to Sean Sullivan because he's going to give you a deal. And they just care. Family owned at Bill Curry Ford. And of course, you'll be pouting if you're drinking something other than Big Storm beer this weekend. Tropic Pressure Golden Ale, Sunny Key Lime, the iconic Wavemaker Amber Ale, the Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA, so many, Ira. And of course, everybody's got on their refrigerator, as we heard before, floridaselite restoration.com. That's the website. You want to call them 24/7 if you have any problem, any disaster in your home, leakage, mold, whatever it might be, fire. They're going to help you out and give you a free assessment so you don't get ripped off.
Steve, I'm in my 60s. Don't use the word leakage. Don't use the word leakage.
Well, see, I thought you were going to talk about your dog.
Now, look, I've been lucky, Steve. I don't get up in the middle of the night like a lot of people do. A lot of men my age, they get up maybe more than once. Got to take a whiz. That's not the case, Steve. Not the case.
Thank you, Ira. Thank you. That will go down in the annals of Ira Kaufman podcast history. We're coming up on episode 500, Ira. I'm going to go back and count, but we'll come, even if we're one or two off, we're going to come up with an official 500th episode and have some fun. So
you're going to do a best of? That's going to take a lot of editing, man. A lot of editing.
Some might say it would only take about 10 minutes, but I guess I don't know. I'll do something. I'll pull something. I'll find when you first told the story of Arthur Blank calling you Irv and all that. Yeah, maybe a few gems.
And maybe the Gruden impression. Maybe the Gruden impression. Throw that in there.
Yeah, I got the Gruden impression of Ira. Sage, one little nugget that it speaks to next year, but it speaks to this year too, and just the power of the Bucks roster, because the total of the numbers are pretty impressive. Over the last two seasons, Carlton Davis leads the NFL in pass breakups and passes defensed, which is an official NFL stat. And top 10 cornerbacks in the NFL, none of them are making less than $14 million, Ira. So that's the kind of raise the Bucks are looking at, and Chris Godwin, and a bunch of other players, and Vita Vea that they might want to extend. And it's going to be a real chess match for Jason Light going forward, who got this extension. Maybe everybody will make it easy for him with an injury, or some guy's play will drop off. But at some point, he can't keep re-signing everybody.
No question about it. I think this Carlton Davis thing is interesting. I think it's interesting. Lee, I know he's been described by people in the organization as a top three corner in the league. I'm not going there, Lee. I'm not there.
I'm not top three yet, no.
I'm not there. Now, I think, clearly, I think he's the best cornerback right now on the Buck roster. I don't have any doubt about that. But, he's not Patrick Peterson when Peterson was in his prime. He's not Revis. He's not Stephen Gilmore a couple of years ago when he was Defensive Player of the Year for the Patriots. He's not. But the guy is good to very good right now and might be taking it to the next level. I'm not giving him elite money, Lee, unless he goes to the next level. And by that I mean, is he a guy that Bowles trusts to follow the best receiver on every team that the Bucks play?
Yeah.
That's an elite guy. That's an elite guy.
Well, that's exactly what Bowles does.
And I'm not sure he can do it. I'm not sure he can do it.
Did he do it last year?
Well, that game against Hill sticks in my mind. I mean, that was brutal.
Sure, you got to be honest. At least, it happened in the third quarter. Yes, it was absolutely brutal. No doubt about it. But he woke up, unfortunately, slightly too late. But he woke up, and you know what? After that first quarter, Mahomes is still looking for his first touchdown against the Bucs after the first quarter.
I understand, but, they gave up 29 touchdown passes. It's a big number, Lee. He's part of that. That number needs to be improved. They need to be a little bit better in the red zone defensively, but I understand Steve's point, this Carlton Davis thing. I still think there's a level he needs to go to, Lee, before I give him the big bucks.
Well, I think Steve's point's perfect. He's going to be getting paid $14 million, whether any of us think he's top five, top three, top ten. He's going to get that money. That's the numbers say. I'm going to have to sit down and try to think, go over other people's rosters, and try to think of who is better than Carlton Davis. I don't know if he's top three. I'm like you, Ira. I don't know if I'd go there. He's damn close. Top five, I won't argue. But I'm going to sit down and do a little bit of research and find out just what cornerbacks are better. I don't think there's that many.
I don't put him in the Jalen Ramsey class, Lee. Not yet.
No. He's probably number one or number two. At worst, number two. I agree. He's not there. He's not there yet.
When I first saw those numbers and was, you know, writing up that little nugget, I started thinking, I wonder how Carlton Davis's peers, and even though it's fluff, it is still legitimate with the voting, if he's going to make those NFL top 100 players on that show coming up this year. But I was thinking, I don't think he will, because the big highlight of Davis's year, no matter how great it was, and no matter how winning the Super Bowl, is him getting roasted all over the place by Tyreek Hill. Every player in the league saw that, you know, 200 plus yards in a quarter. No one's ever seen anything like that before. So it's just one of those moments that he has to overcome, I think, to get certain kinds of recognition. But, you know, I have no problem saying he's a top 10 corner right now, Ira.
Well, I think also another thing he's got going for him, and Lee mentions this quite a bit, and with good reason, they got the coaching staff to keep developing them. And they didn't always have that kind of a coaching staff. And anybody that listens to this podcast over the last 5 years knows that we made that point repeatedly. This coaching staff is top notch. It's top notch. Hey, Steve, one more quick thing. You were talking about numbers and different things. I got an example for you. You know, there's different magazines out that you know, do previews and different things. And one of the traditional magazines is Lindy's, College Annuals and Pro Football.
Oh, yeah.
And Howard Balzer, our good friend to the podcast, Howard Balzer, he's the guy that kind of puts the whole magazine together and assigns, you know, the stories. And I've been doing the Bucks preview, guys, for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years for Lindy's. And I just spotted it in my supermarket the other day, so it's out on the newsstand. Well, anyway, and I think we're the only magazine that does this. It's a position-by-position breakdown, and then you give a numerical rating, 1 to 10, for each position. And it starts with coaching, you know, quarterback, running back, receiver, O-line, and like that. Special teams. And, guys, I got to tell you, until last year's team, you know, I was giving out, you know, 6.5s, you know, maybe a 7, maybe receivers I would go up to an 8, quarterback, you know, 6, whatever. And, you know, then you add them all up, and there's a page at the back of the book where he's got all the totals, the absolute total. And, you know, the Bucks were always kind of, you know, 25th place when you added it all up. Well, I just picked up the magazine, and I was looking at it last night, and the Buck total was, 76 or whatever. It was number one. And that's not because, and you guys know this better than anybody, it's not because I'm a Buck homer. Lee, I've never been called a Buck homer. But the facts are the facts, and I think the Chiefs finished second in the ratings, and that's as it should be. Lee, the facts are the facts. The Bucks have the best roster in football. When you add up all the numbers, and the Bucks have the highest total. I mean, this is up territory for this franchise.
Could be unprecedented territory for the NFL, you know, in a few decades. Maybe not since the Steelers, honestly. I know the Steelers are the last team that brought all their starters back from a Super Bowl winner, the 70 Steelers, the dynasty Steelers, the pre-free agency Steelers.
Steve, for example, you know, and I'm not giving out a 10. I'm just not going to do it. And when it comes to quarterback and receivers, they lump in the tight ends with the wideouts. So, Steve, it comes to quarterbacks, receivers, or linebackers, when you know, you're counting Barrett and JPP and White and David as the linebacker core, I mean, you could give out 2 10s and a 9.5. I mean, you could.
All right, Ira, speaking of 2 10s and a 9.5, this podcast is over. Thank you, Big Storm Beer, Bill Curry Ford, Florida's Elite Restoration. And Sage, be safe out there. Don't slip on your sod, and we'll see you next week.
I'll give you an update on the plush factor, gentlemen. The plush factor. Unprecedented.